app for your morning drive. It's Morning Air with Sean Harriott.
Once again, our reputation precedes us.
Along with Glenn Leverins, bringing you the news from the Vatican and around the world. And now, here's your host, Sean Harriott.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Morning Air. Glad to be with you. And coming up in a little while, we'll have Glenn's Story Corner for you. So hang on for that. And I'm happy to have Father Gene Hemrick back with me. He was ordained in 1963 as a priest of the Diocese of Joliet, Illinois, and directed research for the Bishops Conference for 20 years. And presently, Father Gene is director of the National Institute for the Renewal of the Priesthood. He's also written a weekly nationally syndicated column for Catholic News Service since 1980, and he's written five books. He's the author of Habits of a Priestly Heart, which came out in 2009. Father, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, we're freezing here, too, in Washington, but other than that, fine.
that's good. We're all trying to just keep warm.
Yeah, it's an interesting winter.
Mm. And,
a lot of pipes breaking.
Yeah, true. Hey, you wanted to talk about multiculturalism this morning and ministry.
Right. Let me give you a little bit of history. Over the years, when I was working at the Bishops' Conference, we did a number of studies. One of them was on the Hispanics. And it was called Aliens and Strangers No Longer. And then we did one on the African Americans, Keep Your Hand on the Plow. And in my own background, I've done a lot of work in multiculturalism, especially now with the international priests here in this country. So it's interesting. I went back over some of those days, and I recall these various studies we did, and was very blessed at the time when I did the one on Hispanics to be able to work with a Father Joe Fitzpatrick up at Fordham University. He's a Jesuit. He was Mr. Puerto Rican. He really did a great job with the Puerto Ricans. And actually, they named it, I think, a university after him in Puerto Rico. And in working with him, we were doing a study on Hispanics. And I said, Joe, I've got all these statistics here. Would you help me out? And he said, well, gee, statistics are okay. But, people aren't going to grab that when they open a book up and look at statistics first. What you need to grab them is success stories.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, Joe, you've got some success stories. I would love to do that. We'll put it right up front, and then we'll put the statistics in the back because people want to hear about things that are happening that are good. And he went out with a group of his students, and they went around the country and got some great success stories. So last night, I dug up one of them. And if I may, I'd like to read it because I think your readers would enjoy it. It's on a Hispanic parish. It's Our Lady of Guadalupe. And this is what Joe and his team dug up, and this is what they found. They went in, actually, and did what we would call an anthropological study. They looked at the people there. They talked with them, wanted to find out what issues were going on, what the events were there, and all of that. And this is what he wrote. He says, lay leadership is strong in the parish of Our Lady of Guadalupe. This is in California. One very able woman, Olga Islas, directs the Christian doctrine instruction with the collaboration of 63 volunteers. It's a large number. There is no parochial school. One entire building of the parish is set aside for religious instruction. There are strong RCIA and youth ministry programs in both English and Spanish, as well as Bible classes. There is a sense of great pride among parish lay leaders. We know our own is a common expression. The parish has been the center of social action. By the way, it's amazing when you study the parish as a sociological unit. It's probably one of the best ways to develop a community and to serve a community. Parish is a wonderful thing. It has been a center of advocacy for welfare of Spanish-speaking people. This is an interesting finding because we found this in other places, too, where what they did was they said, you got to get out and get in government. You got to speak up. You can't just wait for people to help you. You've got to go out and be proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been an active St. Vincent de Paul Society within the parish. However, more recently, the parish has become part of a network of parishes in a community organization plan called PAC, People Acting in Community Together. Again, this is a great finding because when you can combine, you get stronger. And to bring in other parishes, it's just that's a brilliant idea. Sometimes parishes become very insular, provincial. They just work on their own basis. Yep. But to bring in others, you get more people involved, and you get more ideas. This is a regional organization that represents the community by demanding services which the people deserve from the city government. Shortly before my visit to the parish, 1,000 people from the area gathered in the cathedral for a meeting with the mayor, in which they presented their demands and apparently received a satisfactory response. And that is social justice in action. Mm-hmm. Parishioners also participate in a community program for youth called BEST, designed to protect youth against drug abuse and to provide rehabilitation programs for addicted youth. The parish was also the center for the development of the Carcillo movement. The first Carcillo was given in California in 1961, and at a later date, Our Lady of Guadalupe became the headquarters of the Spanish Carcillo movement of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Many parishioners are active in Encuentro Conjunga, that's for married couples, which assist married couples in enriching their married lives and helps them prepare to deal with the needs, pressures, and tensions which may trouble them. The parishioners also established a senior citizen center, which has been turned over to the Catholic Social Service Department of the diocese. There are six basic communities in the parish. That's the Comunidad de Bases, formed for the spiritual development of their members. These are small groups that come together, they pray, and then they work on various social problems that are in a parish. This comes out of Latin America, and I was surprised. We had done another study. There's quite a few of these around the country. They're called Comunidad de Bases, the community-based communities. There, thus, we see Our Lady of Guadalupe, evidence of a parish religiously very active and manifesting an active concern for the social, economic, and cultural life of the people. An active parish bookstore makes available to parishioners and other Spanish-speaking people a wide range of books and pamphlets. So now we get into the reality of the parish. Mm-hmm. The parish represents something similar to the national parishes, which played such a critical role in the social, political, and religious life of the immigrants from Europe during the last century. And I can say I've experienced this personally because my grandfather came from Italy, and parish and our church was very much instrumental in bringing all of those immigrants together. The parish is definitely the heart of an active immigrant community. The parishioners know who they are and find a great sense of security, solidarity, and self-confidence in their parish life. However, this does not mean the parish does not face the difficult problems of any inner city population in a large American city. Mm-hmm. The dropout rate of children from the public schools is high. When I visited Joe Fitzpatrick, I'll never forget, first of all, one of the things he said, Gene, they're not on our doorstep, they're within our house. And I said, who are them? He says, the Hispanics. He said, they're here. They're here to stay, and we better really work on it. And then he was very concerned about the second and third generations, and we're losing them. And this whole idea, the dropout rate of children from the public high school is high. That was very much on his mind. Mm-hmm. Drugs are a serious problem among the youth, and that is still going on very much today. The parish is active in drug prevention and rehabilitation programs. I'm from Chicago, and we have a Father Flager who's got a black African-American parish, and I'm surprised he's still alive because he's in a really tough part of Chicago, the South Side. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of shootings in that. He goes to these stores where they, selling these drugs and all that, and he just goes after them. And he's got, by the way, when we went to interview him, we couldn't get to him. He had guards around him. Mm. But he took on the neighborhood, and he's still doing it today. And God bless him, but boy, I'm surprised he's alive because he's going right on the front line. The study goes on to say Pentecostal and evangelical churches dot the area, and despite the vitality of the parish, It continues to lose members to the sex. That's also going on down in Latin America. Teenage pregnancies are numerous, and there are many female-headed households. Were it not for the activity of the parish, these problems would be much greater. Unemployment is high, especially among men. The area is no longer agricultural and work in the fields which provided employment for an earlier generation no longer exist. I saw this down in San Bernardino when I flew in. There used to be a lot of groves down there for grapes and all that other, and it was just being eaten up, and there's no more agriculture down there. Work, women have menial jobs in the high-tech area nearby, but the population is still poor, inner-city population. What is clear is that the presence of an active national or quasi-national parish alone is no cure-all for these inner-city problems, which trouble all inner-city people. A strategy must be found to protect the community against teenage pregnancy, dropping out of school, violence, and drug abuse, long-range unemployment, and poverty. However, an active parish such as Our Lady of Guadalupe provides a favorable environment in which efforts against inner-city problems have a much greater chance of success. And that is just one example of what we were doing in these studies that we would do. And thanks to Father Joe Fitzpatrick, we did this one, and then we did one on African-Americans, which was similar, one after parishes that were succeeding. And we have a parish here, St. Augustine's, in Washington, D.C., and I went in there and interviewed, and really the core of success there was that the pastor gave the lady a lot of leeway, challenged them to be leaders in the parish, and they really take pride in that parish. And that parish goes way back in history. We did a little study on it, and they used to have pews where the blacks, you know, they were supposed to sit in the back. Mm-hmm. Now those pews are on the front, the little label, and it's place of honor. So, That's some of the work we did with the African Americans, and we did with the Hispanics, and then later we did it on the American Indian. To my surprise, I didn't realize we have so many Indian tribes in this country, numerous numbers. And then we also did it with the Orientals, the Vietnamese in particular. So that's some of the work that I was involved in the Bishops' Conference. And then as I was thinking about this interview today, I was going back in time, and the things that I've learned in working with multiculturalism. For example, I worked in a Korean parish, and I'll never forget this. We had this beautiful 18-year-old woman play the piano magnificently, and just a sparkler. And her mother came and said, you know, would you back her? She's going for a grant from Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. I'd love to, yes. I never saw the woman. The mother did all the negotiations, came to the rectory. I fill out the paper. She pushed it. Then later, working with the Koreans, I used to know this Mr. Khan. And one night he said, come on, I'm going to take you out to dinner to a Korean restaurant. And as I met him at the door, he had looked like a Russian sickle. He was wearing it. I said, Mr. Khan, so what is that? He said, what do you think it is? I said, well, you know, it looks like the symbol of the Russians, you know, the sickle. And the city, he said, no. I said, well, what is it? He said, it's the brain. And that's the brain stem. And then he told me, you know, this is what Confucius pushed, that education is so very, very important to the Koreans. In fact, at the Library of Congress, we have a saying by Confucius. Give unto him who has no education, one. Give an education to somebody. And what I saw with that mother was they would work themselves to the bone for their children. They'll stay up nights. They'll take on 2-3 jobs. Education. Get that mind going. And I learned that from the Koreans when I worked with them. I used to say Mass for them at St. Andrew Kim. And it was quite a learning lesson how they, and as a community, how they hold together. I mean, if you're a Korean in this area, you go to that church, they go after you, mm-hmm. make sure that you come. So that was an experience with the Koreans. And then I worked worked out at Orchard Lake in outside of Detroit, and I'll never forget, we had a meeting there. And it was of pastors who have more than one culture in a parish. Actually, in our studies, we have found as many as 25, 30 cultures in a parish, different cultures that, you know, want to be ministered to.
Yeah.
But there was this one pastor from Chicago, and he said that he had the parish, and he had Polish, and he had Hispanics, and he had Blacks. And he said, the way I keep things to going is when we have the Blacks, we have their celebration, Charles Lumumba. Then when we have the Polish, we have, you know, Our Lady at Częstochowicz, and everybody comes. The Blacks come, African-Americans come, and so the Hispanics. And then when the Hispanics have their Lady of Guadalupe, everybody comes for that feast. And he said, we always come around these feasts, and we gather in everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're Polish or you're Greek or whatever. This is the way I keep my parish together. Mm. And in New York, when I was doing some of the study, and we went up there, I was amazed at the various the nationalities they have. And you get a good pastor and a good lay board, and how they can pull a parish together by saying, you are a part of us. You're not up there. We want to celebrate your feast and all of that. By the way, when I was at the bishop's conference, we had a day. It was a multicultural day. We had a lot of people from different cultures. And what they would do was they would set up booths, and they would show where they came from. So if it was down in Chile or Peru or whatever, and then they would have a little taste of their food, and then it would explain some of the customs which were theirs, particular their customs. And it was a real good learning lesson. But the thing was, I was going up and down the elevator with these people for whole years. I never knew their background. And after that, there was a certain closeness that I had to them that I would not have had we not had that day, mm-hmm. in which each was showing their background and how the pride they took in it and what exactly it meant to them. So those are some of the memories of doing wonderful studies in multiculturalism and meeting wonderful people like Joe Fitzpatrick, God bless him, he's up in heaven now.
Well, Father, you mentioned the provincialism that you can see in a parish where people aren't reaching out to people that have a different cultural background. How can you encourage that at the parish level? So that I loved what you were just talking about, where you have the Hispanic celebration, everybody comes. You have the African the celebration of an African saint, everybody comes, everybody in the parish. How do you encourage that?
Well, one of the things, that's a good question. I'm gonna broaden it out a little bit. One of the studies we did was on evangelization, especially down in around Texas in that area. And one of the things we learned was that the Hispanics that we were studying will not come into the parish for a number of reasons. In other words, you can't say, well, here's the parish, and you're invited. Mm-hmm. You've got to go out to them. And Pope Francis has really nailed this down. You've got to walk the talk. You've got to get out of that rectory and go into their homes. One of the reasons is a number of them can't speak English, and they're embarrassed to come.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to reach out. You've got to walk around the neighborhood and get to know the people. You've got to get out, and then you draw them in. But you can't say they're going to come in because you've got all these activities. Yes, it helps, and it does draw people in. But you got to also go out. And I worked with a pastor, and it was a wonderful lesson in this. It wasn't so much a multiculturalism, but this idea of getting out. We would have a brown bag. We would go down into the city of Washington, D.C. I was working out in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And we would meet with our people who worked in the heart of Washington. And we would just sit down and say, what do you do? We got out of the rectory. We drove downtown, went to a parish hall there, had this brown bag. And all of a sudden, now I, who have been preaching to these people for years, am seeing them in their workplace and understanding exactly what they do. And now when I go up and preach, now I'm preaching now to them as they are in their situation. And I'm not bringing something in from outside. I'm going right inside with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going out and mingling with the people, finding out where their workplace is. The Pope Paul VI used to do this. In fact, in Milan, he would go out to the factories, and they said, where's the cardinal? They couldn't find him, and there he was, talking to the men working on the factories there. That's a wonderful example of how we can bring people together better, but you gotta get out of your rectory.
Yes.
Yep.
And we have to get out of our comfort zones as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well,
go ahead,
Father. Thank you so much. You've given us a lot of great things to think about this morning.
Yeah, this is the new era of the immigrant, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you, Father. Good to talk to you this morning.
Great talking with you. Thank you,
Father Gene Hemrick. And again, you can read his weekly column from Catholic News Service, and also his latest book is called Habits of a Priestly Heart. It's 26.